Testing in the House Chamber, Legislative Day 159.
Retire from the chamber. The sergeant in arms will close the doors. Members and guests are asked to please silence all electronic devices. This morning's prayer will be offered by Representative Dahl. Representative Dahl. Would ask everyone to please stand for the prayer on the floor, as well as our guests in the gallery, and to remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance thereafter. Representative Dahl.
If we could please take a moment of silence for those who pray differently than I. Today I come to you with a prayer of listening. I ask that you listen to those that do not agree with you. Listen to those you fear don't like you. Listen to those who are different from you. Listen with the intent of learning and understanding that we are all God's children and we all seek to understand God's will. Thank you and amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for November 17th has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Hall moves the journal for November 17th be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the journal is approved as written. Ratification of bills and resolutions, the clerk will read.
The enroller clerk will post the following bill duly ratified for presentation to the governor. House Bill 91, an act to restructure oversight of public high school interscholastic athletic activities to ensure accountability and fair play. House Bill 165, an act to make various changes to the transportation and motor vehicle laws of the state.
Chapter bills will be noted. Members, Mr. Clerk, Chair directs that Senate Bill 724, expand access to voting. Chair directs that bill be removed from today's calendar. The bill referred to return to the Committee on Campaigns and Election Law. Members, we're going to proceed on with the budget vote. Senate Bill 105, the clerk will read.
Senators B. Jackson, Harrington, and Heiss, Senate Bill 105, a bill to be entitled 2021 Appropriations Act, General Assembly of North Carolina Act.
The gentleman from Forsyth, Representative Lambeth, is recognized to debate the bill, and the House will come to order.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, colleagues. You know, we've said it many times this year. This has been an extremely unusual year, extraordinary in so many respects. I've even referred to it as such a weird period of time in our state and our nation's history. Things that we would have never imagined, things that we're dealing with that, again, we would never imagine that we would be confronted with. Lots of concerns across our nation and our state. But this is really a time that I think we've been able to come together, because I think everyone in this room would agree. We're all here because we're trying to do the things for the people in North Carolina that we represent. We may look a little different. We may have a little different philosophy on things. But I think there's no question that everyone in this room's here because they love North Carolina. They love their community, and they want to do what's right for their community. And I can tell you that there's things in this budget, although I referred to it yesterday as working towards perfection. There's things in this budget that I don't like. I had a long conversation last night with a hospital group that not real happy about a couple things in here. And those are the kinds of things that we'll still have to look at. But I can tell you that this is an extraordinary budget for an extraordinary period of time in our history. I appreciate the vote yesterday. I appreciate each one of you for the thought that you put into this and your vote. It's a long document. There's a lot of information in there. I've gotten a lot of questions about some of the provisions. But I would again encourage you to do what's right for the people of North Carolina, recognizing that it may not be perfect, but overall, it's an extraordinary document. It's extraordinary work. We've had extraordinary staff that put enormous amount of time to guide us through these last several months. And I'm quite frankly very proud to be here today to cast a vote for this budget to help the people of my district, my county, and my state. And I hope you will join with me again today in pushing the yes vote. Wouldn't it be extraordinary again if we had a unanimous vote overlooking some of the concerns you might have and vote for this budget and let's move on and get this money out. We're already late. We need to get this money out to the people that need it. So my challenge to you is let's make this as close, if not unanimous, as we can and move on and be proud to be citizens of this great state of North Carolina. Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Wake, Representative Adcock, rise?
To debate the bill.
Lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to echo a bit of what Representative Lambeth has said and just remind us of what I thought were the stirring comments of Leader Reeves yesterday. The bill before us, this budget, is a historic work of bipartisan compromise. It's the result of hard work of the members who, all members who had input on it, the staff that worked so hard on it, and the thoughtfulness of every member in this chamber who is going to vote on it. I would ask you to vote your conscience on this bill. I intend to vote yes and would urge many members to do the same. Thank you.
Members, the chair is going to give the majority leader the final debate. Are there any other members who wish to debate the bill? If not, the gentleman from Wayne, majority leader, Representative Bell, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and members. It's a good day for our state, and I was excited coming up here this morning with a strong vote that we had yesterday and the hard work that has been done. I want to repeat some of the thank yous and add a little more to it. First of all, none of us would be here today voting on this budget if it wasn't for our partisan staff, the speaker staff, the appropriation chair staff, your staff, and all the folks sitting on that back row with our central staff that have worked for the last 11 months preparing this document for its final vote today. Their hard work has not gone unnoticed. The late nights, early mornings, thank you for what you do. A lot of people do not know the work that you put in, but we as members get to see you day in and day out and the hard work you do for the citizens of this state. I want to thank our appropriation chairs. I've been in that room. I know what it's like to sit there, not as long as you have, but for days on days, from morning to night, eating wonderful, healthy food and staring at the window as people are walking by enjoying life and you're stuck there wishing you could get this done. But thank you for your work and the work that you did to make this happen. I also want to thank the 9 Democrat members that voted on the House budget that joined us in making sure that this budget continued to get worked on, continued to get better, and became the strong bipartisan budget that you see before us. And I also want to thank my friend and colleague, Representative Robert Reeves, the Democratic leader. Robert has always, from day one, been willing to work with both sides of the aisle and somehow has navigated both sides of this aisle, both sides of the aisle in the other chamber, in conjunction with the governor's office, to put forth a good budget for the state of North Carolina. I want to thank him for his always willingness to find ways to make things happen for our state. Members, I get a chance to travel the state, and this weekend, my wife and I were up in Bobby Hanning's district and went out to Corolla and looked at the horses and came back. And as I was driving through, I'd never been to Elizabeth City State University. And I said, well, let's take a detour and go and see what's going on, because I knew about a lot of the stuff that we've been working on there. And I actually was on the phone with the speaker at the time as I was driving through, and we were talking about the funding in this budget, not just for our entire university system, but for smaller schools like Elizabeth City State University, where it's going to be completely transformative, not just to the university, but for the community as a whole. And what amazing things this budget is doing for our community colleges and our schools all across the state. And then I got to thinking about our state employees, our hardworking state employees that didn't get a day off during the pandemic. Some worked from home, some worked on the front lines day in and day out to making sure that the services of our citizens were met. The raises in there for them, the raises in there for our teachers. And then I looked at our instructional personnel, our bus drivers, our cafeteria workers, our teacher assistants. And what we're doing in this budget actually changes lives for the better. And as you're driving through the state, you get a chance to go into little communities, one that you've heard a number of times in my district, the little town Eureka. But with the water and sewer infrastructure in this budget, we're actually going to give these small communities an opportunity to have new water and sewer lines. Some of these have not been replaced since the 20s and 30s. All across the state, little towns like Eureka, like Princeton, and so forth and so on are going to have opportunities to recruit business and industry simply because they now have the capacity to be able to do that with water and sewer infrastructure. This body has made it a mission since I've been here to make sure that our state has broadband capabilities. From the mountains to the coast, this budget continues that effort to make sure that all 100 counties are on that mission to be broadband capable, which is something that every other state is envious of. You've helped do that. We talk about healthcare. There's many issues with healthcare in this budget, but one that's near and dear to me that I've had the chance to argue and debate and file bills over for many years is actually going to become a reality. If you believe in the opportunities that we have to really grow in the rural spaces with rural health care, there is nothing bigger to access to care in rural North Carolina than a new Brody School of Medicine. Many representatives have gone and come and have fought for this, and the $214 million that's going to go in to create a new Brody School of Medicine is going to help put rural health care providers in all 100 counties in this state. It's transformative. Not just to Eastern North Carolina, but to all North Carolina. And then we sat here a few months back, and those gold doors opened, and it was one of the most memorable moments I've had on this floor when we saw our wounded warriors, our veterans, come walking in to celebrate the Alive Day that were missing limbs, that have come back from combat. And what we have done for veterans in this budget, not just a military tax exemption, but the fact that we now have a program that expands all across the state to not just address the physical scars, but the mental scars to ensure that no veteran is left behind. We truly can stand on this floor and say that we are the most military-friendly state in this country. Ladies and gentlemen, those are just some of the few highlights in this budget. These are some of the few reasons why this budget and this spending plan is really good for the citizens of this state. And I ask every single one of you to vote green. Thank you.
The question before the House is the adoption of the motion to adopt the conference report on its third reading for Senate Bill 105. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Harrison, no. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 101 having voted in the affirmative and 10 in the negative. The conference report to Senate Bill 105 is adopted on its third reading, and the Senate will be so notified. Senator Berger, did you get that notice? Okay. Thanks for being with us today, by the way. House Bill 259, the clerk will read.
Representatives Kidwell, Cal Hall, McNeely, and Cleveland, House Bill 259, a bill to be entitled Election Integrity Act, General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Gentleman from Beaufort, Representative Kidwell, recognized to briefly debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill's, in my portion of it anyway, I think Representative Cleveland has a little more length on some information in this as well, but this bill seeks to clean up and address some of the issues that our citizens in North Carolina have, I think justifiably so, in a concern that there may be computer access from other countries getting into some of our voting equipment in the United States. So we're just trying on part one of this bill to make sure that the voting machines in North Carolina are protected as much as possible by having them manufactured and the software from United States-owned businesses and manufactured here in the United States. With that, Representative Cleveland may want to address Section 2 of the bill and beyond.
Gentleman from Monson, Representative Cleveland, recognizes as well to briefly debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Section 2 of the bill, we're laying out the qualifications to be a juror in the state. Section 3 and 4 will require the administrative officer courts to establish a form for the excuses from jury duty, so it's consistent across the state, and it also gives the chief judge the authority to delegate to his clerk or superior court to approve or disapprove requests for jury service. Section 5 establishes a process for the clerk or superior court to retain the personal information of each person who requests to be excused and is not qualified to serve as a juror, along with the reason for the request. They'd have to maintain the records for the remainder of the biennium. The information retained by the clerk is not a public record. Section 5 of the bill would require the clerk of superior court to record the personal information and the reason for disqualification and date of disqualification. If a person disqualified from jury duty, if they claimed not to be a citizen of the United States, the clerk would be required to report this information electronically to the State Board of Elections quarterly. The State Board would be required to conduct efforts to remove names from the list of registered voters from this information. The records retained by the State Board would be public records, except for personal identifying information protected by state and federal law. The State Board will be required to retain the records for 4 years. Section 6 establishes a process for removal of non-citizens excused from jury duty on the basis removing from the voter registration rules from their comments that they were not a citizen. Section 6 also would require the State Board to, if they determine that a prospective juror voted prior to obtaining citizenship, they would have to furnish the district attorney in the county of the individual a copy of their investigation for prosecution and violation. Section 7 directs the administrative office of the courts to adopt rules to implement the provisions of the Act. And Section 8 requires post-election audits beginning in October of 2019. The State Board is required to prepare a report of a post-election audit and submit the report to the Elections Oversight Committee and the General Government Oversight Committee. And, Mr. Speaker, that is what's in the bill.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House. I'll go ahead and take the lady from Wake, Representative Dahl, is this to debate the bill?
Yes.
Well, he has four.
That's actually to ask the bill sponsor a question.
Which one? Representative Cleveland?
Representative Cleveland.
Representative Cleveland. Gentlemen, yield.
I yield.
He yields.
Representative Cleveland, is there a fiscal note to this bill? There seems to be a lot of concern among the lawyers over here that this is going to cost a lot of money and put undue burden on the clerks of court as well as the court system. So.
Mr. Speaker.
But I can answer. Let me answer the question on that, Representative Dodd. There was no fiscal note on it. There's not one required. It's not shown as a financial impact, according to the attorneys. There's a notation that gets put on the bill. So, looks like according to what we're seeing, not a known fiscal impact.
Oh, I would like to defer to my colleague over here.
Well,
no. Okay, sorry. I believe... Let me just debate the bill for a minute.
Right, he has four. Debate the bill. Chair is hoping that our debate may be brief on these bills today.
I'm hoping. So. In my limited knowledge of the court system, after working for 18 years in the court system and working with the court system, this seems to be a gracious plenty of work to add on to some already overworked folks. I realize that there is a school of thought that thinks that this is just a little bit of work and it won't be anything to add it to. But I also know that the courts are overworked right now, standing in line and waiting just to get an information about your case can take hours. So I would ask that you guys vote no on this bill and we go back to the drawing table and make sure that everyone in the state of North Carolina, meaning everybody in a courthouse, the clerks are happy and willing to undertake this work.
For what purpose did the lady from Durham, Representative Morey, rise?
Thank you. To debate the bill?
The lady has the floor.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the title of this bill is erroneously named Election Integrity Act, which infers that we don't have election integrity in our process today. And I strongly disagree with that. I think Section 1 of the bill to require everything be American-made also infers that any chip, any part of any election machine, scanner, anything, if it is made out of the country, is a corrupted piece of electronics or chips. ESNS uses other parts that come from abroad in our election machines. Not once has anything been shown to corrupt the machines or corrupt the vote. That section is unnecessary. But basically, and I agree with Representative Dahl, what we're doing is asking the courts to now become another arm of election integrity to report to the Board of Election anytime a juror excuse comes in where someone has marked not a citizen, requiring a clerk to research that, to send that information to the Board of Election. The thing is, juror lists are created every other year, and where do jury lists come from? They come from the voter registration. They already come from voter registration. They also come from the DMV, where everyone has to have a Social Security number and be a citizen. This entire bill is saying to our citizens, we don't have election integrity in this state. It is a bill in search of a problem. It is unnecessary. I urge you to vote no.
For what purpose? The gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise.
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
I'd like to thank my colleagues for their comments and for the concern for the Representative Cleveland and Kidwell about election integrity. I think we all care about election integrity, but this bill does something just a little different. It actually helps to undermine sort of people's faith in democracy. I wanted to give just a few facts that actually come from the Board of Elections about what they do to ensure that we actually have security and integrity in our elections. So first, paper ballots. Under state law, all voting systems used in North Carolina must use paper ballots, producing a paper trail that can be audited. This was written just prior to 2020. Certified voting systems. All voting machines used in North Carolina are certified by the U.S. Election Assistance Commission after testing by certified laboratories. They are also certified by the State Board of Elections after additional testing, and all systems certified in North Carolina are certified, used, and audited in other states. Also, related to audits, after every election and before results are certified, the state and county boards of elections conduct audits designed to detect irregularities such as equipment tampering, ballot stuffing, and vote machine or tabulation errors. Also, for logic and accuracy testing before every election, county boards of elections conduct logic and accuracy tests on every machine that will be used to ensure proper coding of ballots and counting of votes for every contest on the ballot. And so with those facts, I hope that you will stand with us on this side, as my colleague Representative Dahl said, step back, let's think through this, and let's think about real ways. This seems like a something that's we're looking for a problem with this, whereas our boards of elections, the State Board of Elections, has done an absolutely incredible job in making sure that our elections are secure and fair. If not, none of us would be here. And so I wanted to just share those facts for everyone's edification, in case you did not know exactly what is already in place. And I believe that our elections are secure, that they do have integrity, but we have to be very diligent about making sure that we don't undermine people's faith in democracy. So I ask you to stand with us and vote no on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the passage of House Bill 259 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Harrison, no. Representative Shepherd on the floor. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 61 having voted in the affirmative and 47 in the negative. House Bill 259 passed the second reading without objection. Be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina next.
Question for the House. Passage of House Bill 259 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Ayes appear to have it. As do have it, House Bill 259, having passed third readings, ordered sent to the Senate by special messenger. Senate Bill 326, the clerk will read.
Senators Daniels, Newton, and Heiss, Senate Bill 326, a bill to be entitled Election Day Integrity Act, General Assembly of North Carolina Annex.
Representative Hunter, how's the gentleman wish to be recorded on that previous vote we just did?
No.
The gentleman be recorded as having voted no on House Bill 259, second reading. The gentleman from Iredell, Representative Mills, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the House, good morning. Senate Bill 326, the Election Day Integrity Act, is a straightforward bill that requires absentee mail-in ballots be received by county boards of elections on Election Day. It's not 3 days after, not 9 days after, but on Election Day. Election Day is a date that voters know well. It's a date that's easy for voters to remember. Over half of the states presently have Election Day as the cutoff day for their mail-in absentee ballots. I believe it's over 30 states. The objective of this bill is to provide certainty to election outcomes, hopefully on election night or as soon as possible thereafter, providing election results to voters in a more timely fashion will build voter confidence in our elections, in our elections process. The bill addresses the uncertainty many voters have about mail-in ballots coming in after Election Day has passed. By adjusting the date that absentee mail-in ballots are due, we will address many voters' frustrations in the uncertainty that is created every day that passes after an election when there is no determined winner. We can improve voter confidence, and that's exactly what this bill aims to do. Now, the bill also calls for boards of elections to inform voters about absentee ballot deadlines so that they may plan accordingly, and it also requires the board to report one-stop and absentee voting data more consistently. More transparency about the number of outstanding ballots is a good thing. Voters deserve more information during the election, more transparency, not less. I urge you to vote yes to this bill. Let's join the majority of other states by establishing Election Day, the easy day to remember, as the deadline for mail-in ballots.
Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose, gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Richardson?
Ask the bill sponsor a question.
Representative Mills, gentleman yield to a question?
Yes, sir.
He yields.
Does this, thank you for yielding.
Yes,
does
sir.
Does this legislation apply to service personnel?
No, sir. This is your regular mail-in absentee ballots. It's not overseas or military voter or military ballots.
Does it apply to spouses of military personnel?
It applies to regular mail-in ballots. So people who would normally request a regular mail-in ballot, not an overseas ballot, not a military ballot.
Does it apply to, do you know if it applies to the spouses and children that are 18, you know, that are overseas with a military?
It would not apply to overseas ballots.
Does it apply to civil service workers that are overseas?
It does not apply to have a votes or to overseas ballots.
Thank you.
For what purpose the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Alexander, rise?
To debate the bill.
Gentleman has the floor.
I have spent a considerable part of my life since I was about 9 years of age engaged in voter registration and motivational activities, first getting older folk to get out and vote, and then later on dealing with my contemporaries. I've been involved in partisan and nonpartisan activities. And throughout that time frame, I have noticed a consistent deterioration in the Postal Service. The law that we have on the books right now, by allowing folk to have the ballots postmarked on election day and then allowing a period of time for them to be received by the Board of Election recognizes this deterioration and also recognizes the fact that some folk may not make up their minds until election day, but because of their circumstances, it may be more convenient for them to use the Postal Service than to try to get a ballot in by a time certain on election day. There's a difference between folk who vote using the mails and folk who go in person to vote. The measure before us does not adequately represent or recognize that difference. The other thing is I've noticed in the argumentation a couple of times it was mentioned that a number of other states do it this way, as it's being purported to be done in this bill. And I kind of scratched my head because I began to wonder, since when has North Carolina paid much attention to what other states are doing? You know, we kind of selectively decide that we're going to follow other states. I mean, a classic example would be in legalization of marijuana. A whole bunch of states have done that, but, you know, we haven't followed them, Mr. Speaker. So if we're not marching,
I just got to say that's a first, that marijuana legalization and the gentleman has the floor to continue. Go ahead. I just want to see where this goes.
Well, I could say that some folks are smoking some stuff, but I'm not going to say that. I urge you to seriously not tamper with something that's not broken. To allow citizens who legitimately at the last minute make up their minds to drop that absentee ballot into a post box to be able to do it knowing that their ballot will have a chance to arrive in time to be counted. And lastly, the last time I was looking at statistics, the way we do things now actually benefits Republicans more than it does Democrats. So it's kind of odd for me as a lifelong Democrat to be arguing to figure out how to get Republican votes counted legitimately There's just something odd about that. In any way, please join me in voting against this measure.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative John, rise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, of the current law, the three-day period, grace period, allows a safety valve, provides a safety valve to accommodate the conscientious voter who follows all the rules, puts his ballot or her ballot in the mail at the appropriate time, and for one reason or another, it does not arrive at the election board on the date of election. That's just a common sense accommodation to reality. I don't know what your experience with the Postal Service has been. I had recently an experience, a campaign card that we all mail out. My campaign mailed out in the 2020 election on September the 8th, 2020. In the post office box we used for the campaign, I received this card, apparently misaddressed, on July 7th, 2021. We don't need to eliminate this safety valve because we don't like 3-day period or because we're upset about some longer period that may have been imposed in a recent election. My mother used to use the expression, throw out the baby with the bathwater. That's essentially what this bill is doing. It's reacting to a 3 or 10-day period to receive ballots and throwing the baby out with the bathwater and say we're not going to have any safety valve. I ask you, members, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's vote no on this bill. Thank you very much.
What purpose the lady from New Hanover, Representative Butler, rise?
To debate the bill, Mr. Speaker.
Lady has the floor.
Ladies and gentlemen, these election bills we see today are not the product of North Carolina legislating. They come to you fresh off the press from the American Legislative Exchange Council, known as ALEC. These bills are templates being trotted out across the country to restrict access to the polls, not, by the way, with direct or courageous frontal attacks, but with more insidious, subtle, glancing blows, all under the guise of protecting elections. You know, these are the kind of restrictions designed to stop just short of driving the voters out into the streets in protest, but robust enough to harvest votes off the margins where elections tend to be won and lost. So whether it is cross-referencing disqualified jurors or moving the acceptance date of absentee ballots, the goal is the same: to make it harder for people that are traditionally, on balance, more likely to vote as Democrats. So that's the game plan. Let's just get it out there. That's what we're talking about here. And all of this language about manufacturing voting machines in America and audits and record keeping and integrity, those are all dog whistles designed to imply that these things are necessary in the first place, to imply that there are urgent, pervasive problems here with the way we have been conducting elections for generations. It's just not true, and we all know it. So these bills are an attempt to gaslight the public. In the absence of any proof of election impropriety in North Carolina or anywhere else in this country for that matter, with perhaps the exception of McRae Dallas, our own native son, Dallas McRae, whatever his name is, what you're doing is wrong because you are perpetuating a false narrative of all of the counts and the recounts and the audits and the hoopla across this country, what was found? Virtually nothing. So we need to stop the charade. When you intentionally attempt to chill participation in elections by undermining voter confidence with information that is flatly wrong, you are tearing at the fabric of our democracy. And we know, and I think we would all believe, that voting is the hallmark of any democracy. It's the foundation. It's the basis upon all at what everything else depends. And you know, I find it so interesting. As Americans, we send emissaries to fledgling democracies around the globe. We do it all the time to try to instill our principles, our guiding principles in them. We remind them of the sanctity of the vote. We teach them that every vote must be equal, that every voice matters, and that disenfranchising voters is the first step toward the decline of any democracy. We tell them that democracies are fragile, and we stress how the power must always remain in the hands of the people. These are lessons that we desperately need to revisit upon ourselves, and soon. And maybe Abraham Lincoln said it the best. America will never be destroyed from the outside. But if we falter and lose our freedoms, it will be because we destroyed ourselves. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the lady from Orange, Representative Insko, rise?
To debate the bill.
Lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At the very least, this bill needs to be changed to require the post date, the date the ballot is mailed, to be the measure. Because not all postages, not all ballots go in at the same time. They don't take, sometimes people get their mail in 3 days, sometimes it's in 5 days, sometimes it's a week. So when can I mail my ballot? I can mail my ballot, so the bill needs to be changed so that the ballot needs to be postmarked by a certain date. And I urge you to vote no until that change is made.
Question for the House, passage of Senate Bill 326 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Willis, aye. Representative Harrison. Harrison, no. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 62 having voted in the affirmative and 48 the negative. Senate Bill 326 passed the second reading without objection. Be read a third time.
General Senator North Carolina next.
Question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 326 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senate Bill 326 having passed third reading be sent to the Senate by a special messenger. Actually, strike that. That will be ordered enrolled and sent to the governor by special messenger. Senate Bill 725, the clerk will read.
Senators Heiss, Daniel, and Newton, Senate Bill 725, a bill to be entitled Prohibit Private Money in Election Administration. General Senator North Carolina enacts.
Representative Mills, would the gentleman like to take care of the amendment first of all?
Yes, sir.
The gentleman is recognized to send forth the amendment. The clerk will read.
Representative Mills moves to amend the bill on page 1, line 21, by deleting July 1st, 2023, and substituting July 1st, 2022.
Gentleman is recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, the amendment simply changes the date from July 1st, 23 to July 1st, 22. I urge your support. Thank you.
For any debate or discussion on the amendment? If not, those in favor of the amendment will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. Now, as you have it, the amendment's adopted. Representative Mills, would the gentleman like to debate the bill or allow Representative Johnson? The gentleman from Polk, Representative Johnson, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill simply says virtually what the title does. It just prohibits, when I say in the sense of private money, money coming in from outside the Board of Elections for the purpose of administering elections. You know, I think there is a sense that when that money is coming in, I think that deteriorates the the integrity, and if they need money, that should happen through the counties. So prior to this, I was a county commissioner. If the Board of Elections needed money to run elections, they would come to us with an appropriation request, and I think that's how it should be done, not these outside entities. I'd appreciate your support.
For what purpose does the lady from Wake, Representative Dahl, rise?
Question for the bill sponsor.
Representative Johnson, the gentleman yield?
I'll certainly do my best.
So it was my understanding that the money came into the State Board of Elections and then was disseminated to the counties, so that that money was actually coming to the counties through another venue. It was also my understanding that that money was used for protective equipment due to the pandemic to make sure that people felt safe while voting. Is that untrue? I
can't speak to what the counties used the money for exactly. I can't speak exactly to what the counties used the money for, but I will say if they needed money for that protective equipment and to run the election safely in their eyes, there's a way to do that. It's going to the County Board of Commissioners asking for the appropriation. At the State Board of Elections, it would be coming to us asking for that appropriation. To my understanding and the research I've done, the LLC that's been prominently funneling this money to North Carolina was filed very much prior to the pandemic. I think it was either 2015 or 2017. So I don't think that was the original intent of it. But if they need that money to conduct elections safely, I would just humbly suggest they ask for that appropriation to do so.
Further discussion, further debate. For what purpose, lady from Wake, Representative Dahl, rise?
I'd like to debate the bill, please.
Lady has floor to debate the bill.
So I've spent the last 2 days furious, stomach in knots, angry, and I hesitate to show this emotion here because when I get angry or mad, I cry. And people see that as a weakness. I tend to see it as a strength because I have held in those tears in order to find compromise and find solutions and not to create problems. But I've pretty much reached my limit today. And I want you to know why I'm angry. The reason I feel this way is I feel shame. I feel shame for this house and how we are going about the people's business. We have so many good opportunities to work together. Just yesterday and today, we had a great bipartisan vote. And we need to take these election bills back to the drafting table, work together, and make North Carolina a leader in election law, not a follower. These election bills are based on unfounded fears that elections are being stolen or that there's fraud in our elections. To further my point, yesterday in rules I heard that these election laws are needed due to the perception and the suspicion that folks have. Guys, people have those fears only because these bills keep appearing across the state. Can we just vote no? Nobody was underhandedly trying to sway any election. Folks were trying to make sure people were safe. Regardless of how you feel about this pandemic, people lost their lives. They died. Now, I'm sorry. I don't think people should be asked to die to vote. Although I am willing to die on this hill to make sure that everybody can vote. I don't want just Democrats to vote. I want everybody to have a voice. If they're eligible to vote in the state of North Carolina, then they should be able to vote, period. If you lose, you lose. If you win, you win. I didn't sign up for this election because I thought I could win. Quite honestly, I was so angry at the Democratic Party after I won by primary because they wouldn't offer me any support. And they were like, well, you got it in the bag. I was like, what are y'all talking about? Because I feel like every election, you need to be put your best foot forward. And I still, until the night of the election, and I actually won, I still didn't believe I was going to win. Because I think that people make their minds up and they vote their conscience. And I'm here to tell you, I vote my conscience. And I will admit that I have actually voted for a Republican before because I voted my conscience. So I don't trust that everybody's going to vote one way or another. And I'm getting in the weeds here, but I just cannot express clearly enough how we have got to stop basing decisions and bills and laws on fears, on suspicions, on feelings. We need to base them on facts, on law. We need to look at what is actually happening. And what is actually happening is that people are electing the people they want to office. For the most part, I'm not going to get into redistricting or anything like that. But we've got to stop. We've had such a good set, you know, we've had some good votes. Sure, we've argued, but I see no sense in continuing or perpetuating this lie. Thank you. Please vote no.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Richardson, rise?
To debate this bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Members, I've got a modest suggestion. Everybody knows what's going to happen. You're going to push these bills through. The governor's going to veto them, and then we're going to use them as election fodder to shoot at each other. Let's don't do that. We just did an historic thing here, a very good thing with this bipartisan budget. If we have election law issues, let's get a bipartisan committee together and let's fix it. But let's don't use this stuff to shoot at one another. And let's don't do this to win elections. Let's fix it. If we really want to have, if we're concerned about the security of our elections, if we're really sincere about that, let's use this model we just did with the budget, form a bipartisan committee, and genuinely sit down and talk and listen to each other and fix it. But what we're doing now is not helpful. It is not going to bring North Carolina together. And right now, this country needs us to come together like no other time in our history. Don't do this. Let's fix this if we really want to, but let's do not use it as election cannon fodder. Thank you.
Question for it. To what purpose the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise?
To briefly debate the bill.
Gentleman has the floor.
I just want to add, and I want to thank my colleague, Representative Dahl, for her passionate plea to do better. My colleague, who also has clearly outlined what the results of this bill will be. And I think a lot of you have heard me talk about the fact that I believe deeply in democracy. It is the bedrock of who we are. It's what makes America the greatest country on the face of the earth. And the bedrock is absolutely ensuring that people understand and have faith in what we do in our elections. And so I want to make sure that you understand this really specifically from the perspective of a voter, an African-American voter, and voters like me who are deeply impacted by the changes in elections. And so the changes in laws sometimes have disparaging impacts in the way that they are put forth because they seem targeted in many ways. Why is this bill necessary? Who is it helping and who is it hurting are the things that you absolutely have to ask yourself when you're putting those things forward. Does it empower people or does it hurt people? And again, push them away from the process that we all hold dear and the reason why we're sitting in our seats. And so, again, not to speak too long to this particular piece, but when we're asking folks to get a ballot in at a time that's just not, I think, reasonable, When it's a time that we can make sure that we give everyone the opportunity to cast their ballot in as many ways as possible, we need to do those things. People are looking at us. We're the ninth largest state in the country. We're our official swing state. So what we do matters not just to the people here, but also the people that are around the country looking at the great state of North Carolina. And so I just plead with you that we vote no on this bill. We think long and hard about what we want to be. And as Representative Dahl said very clearly, how North Carolina can be a leader in elections, in voting rights, in election law. So join us. Vote no. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose, gentleman from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman, rise.
Speak on the bill.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There seems to be a question being raised here as to whether there's any fraud going on. Just speaking for myself, we took a look after last year's election, and we found a bunch of fraud committed against me in the election. Now, I don't begin to assume that only Democrats commit fraud. I'm sure there's probably some Republicans that do that, too. Wouldn't be surprised. But to say that we don't need to try to do everything we can to stop it is missing the point. It is happening. And some of you newer folks wouldn't remember me saying this. Maybe everybody else has forgotten it, so I'll say it again. It's like this. You don't think there's any fraud around? It's like this guy's walking down the road one day and he meets a friend who's walking along beating two sticks together. And the guy says, "What's up with the sticks? What are you doing?" He said, "It keeps tigers away." He said, "There's no tigers around here." He said, "You see how well it works?" There is fraud, maybe on both sides. I know it because I know what fraud was committed against me. And so I think we do need to take some efforts like this to try to curtail it. And I think it's worth it. Please vote yes.
For what purpose, gentleman from Polk, Representative Johnson, rise.
Speak to a bill a second time.
Gentleman's recognized too briefly. Debate the bill a second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And just to kind of reiterate what the bill actually does is prevent increased public confidence in our elections by prohibiting these private entities, dark money groups, and outside corporations being able to give money straight to boards of elections. That's all the bill does. Very simple, one page. I'd appreciate your support. Thank you.
Question for the House. Passage of Senate Bill 725 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Harrison, no. Representative Dahl, wish to vote. Clerk will watch machine record the vote. 63 having voted in the affirmative, 48 in the negative. Senate Bill 725 passes second reading without objection. Be read a third time.
General 7, North Carolina, next.
Question for the House. Passage of Senate Bill 725 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. In your pen of the chair, the ayes have it. The ayes do have it. Senate Bill 725. Having passed its third reading, sort of returned to the Senate by a special messenger. Members, we do have one of the bill, but the chair wants to take care of a couple of quick recognitions of members and the guests that we have with us here today. First off, on motion of Representative Goodwin of Chowan County, the chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to the retired city manager for the town of Eatonton, who was there for 40 years, Anne Marie Knighton. And also her replacement, Corey Gooden, who's here with her. Would y'all please stand so we could welcome you? Are they still here? Oh, here on the left. Good to see you guys here today. And Mr. Cork, on that previous bill, chair further directs that bill be engrossed prior to it being sent to the Senate by special messenger. Also, we have a group of students here with us from Huntersville. So on motion of the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Bradford, the chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to members of the Student Leadership Council at South Lake Christian Academy in Huntersville. They are here visiting for the day to learn more about North Carolina state government history. They're here on the right. I want to thank you for being here with us today. And to the students, your representative is Representative Bradford right here for Huntersville. So that's it. And then I do want to quickly recognize Representative Representative Hanning from Currituck. The gentleman has a representative statement that will be read upon adjournment and spread across the journal today, but do want to recognize him for a very special point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today I rise to honor a truly remarkable citizen that devoted her entire life to making her community better, Miss Virginia Tillett. She was born in Dare County, North Carolina, where she attended Roanoke High School and graduated in 1959. She moved away for a short period of time, returning home with the love of her community in her heart. She pursued an education at Elizabeth City State University, where she graduated with a Bachelor of Science degree in education. Miss Virginia and her husband, William Snooks Tillett, you know there's a good story behind that nickname, a commercial fisherman, were later blessed to become the parents of Johnny and Michael Tillett, and they became her driving force in life. They have the strong love for their community and public service she did. I know she was incredibly proud of both of you. Virginia joined Haven Creek Missionary Baptist Church and remained a member until her death. She also served as deaconess there until her health began to decline. Miss Virginia's community involvement began with the Dare County Board of Education, where she served as both chair and vice chair during her 20 years. Roanoke Island Head Start Assistant Dean and Coordinator of Continuing Education of the Albemarle, College of the Albemarle, Dare County Board of Commissioners, Roanoke Island Freedom Colony, and Elizabeth City State University Board of Trustees. One of her proudest accomplishments to the community was the completion of the Dare County Community Center, located in Roanoke Island, which will be named in her honor. Miss Virginia received numerous recognitions for her service and always remained humbled by them. A few she held dear to her heart were, in 2006, she was honored by the Governor of North Carolina with the prestigious Order of the Longleaf Pine Award. 2006, she was named Citizen of the Year at the Outer Banks Chamber of Commerce. In 2015, she was named Outstanding Community Citizen of the Year. In 2015, she was named Outer Banks Chamber of Commerce Citizen of the Year. In 2021, she was honored by the North Carolina Black Alliance Trailblazer Award recipient for her dedication to community and servant leadership for many years. Miss Virginia Tillett was a strong, proud woman. She exemplified what it meant to be a community service person. Her love of her family, education, and her community have made Dare County a better place to live, work, and raise a family. I'm truly blessed to have got to know Miss Virginia. She always had a kind word for me and words of encouragement. Sometimes, you know, you kind of felt like she was encouraging, but she was also warning you to do the right thing. She was very good at it and very convincing. Please keep her family and our community in your hearts and prayers as we remember one of the truly best. Mr. Speaker and members, I commend this resolution to you. Thank you.
Gentleman from Chatham, Representative Reeves, is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I also would like to have an opportunity to talk about Ms. Virginia Tillett. I had a chance to meet Ms. Tillett once I got into office here because she was close friends to one of the people I'm closest to in this chamber. And no, that's not Amos Quick. I love Amos, but I've got one of my family members, Valerie Fasci, who did serve in this chamber and is also a senator next door. And everything that Senator Fasci told me about her as we were approaching, and then all that she's had to say about her since that time, I saw in that meeting. She had a wonderful smile, a pleasant personality, and you could clearly tell that she was somebody who cared about serving people and helping people and had kind words to say. She was encouraging and very humble. And I know that when I talked to Senator Fasci, they had a chance to know each other through being on the Board of Education together, through being county commissioners together, and had just very similar career paths. And some of the things that Ms. Tillett also did, along with all the accomplishments that you've already heard, is that she had a chance to help get open a professional arts building for the community college that she had spent so much time at. And one of our other accomplishments was to help and kickstart the New Horizons program for folks with substance abuse in rural areas, which is something that meant a lot to her. But as long as she could, as hard as she could, she served everybody in that county to the best of her ability. And I think one of the greatest testaments that you can have is that when you finished your service, not only in public service, but here on this earth, that people remember you for all of the kind things that you did for them. There are many people who have stories just like Representative Hannig about their interactions with her, about her kindness and her consideration. And I think all of us would be lucky to have people think of us and remember us as they do Ms. Tillett. And I do commend this resolution to you.
The gentleman from Chihuahua, Representative Goodwin, is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
To speak on Ms. Tillett. John, it's good to see y'all up there today. Sorry for the circumstances you're under. I met Ms. Tillett, and I called her Ms. Tillett all the time. I met her when I was commissioner in Choyne County, and she was commissioner in Dare County. So we had a lot of meetings together. And every now and then she'd dress me down and tell me what I should say or what I should do, or she would say, if I was you, I wouldn't say that again. And I said, Ms. Tillett, you're not saying anything. She said, I know when to keep my mouth shut. I don't know whether Johnny, y'all can confirm that or not, but when I worked down in Dare County when I was the director of the Ferry Division, before that I worked for McCrory, Governor McCrory, as his Eastern Regional Director. Tried to get the governor to leave New York and come down and help inspect Oregon Inlet Bridge because it was about to fall down. It was rated as the number one, the poorest, troublesome bridge in the country. And the pilings were not touching the sand, and Ms. Tillett was scared to death to go out there. She had heard all the stories that the fishermen said about the bridge, so the governor went down. Ms. Tillett wanted to be involved. It was wind blowing that day. Everybody's hair and clothes were blowing all up. And Ms. Tillett said, Ed, I can't get out of the car. I said, well, I'll help you. She said, not that way. I'm not getting out of the car. I don't like water, and I don't like wind, and it'll blow me over the bridge. I said, Ms. Tillett, I hold on to you. She said, okay. So I got out of the car, and we walked about far from here to Sam there. And she stopped and said, this is far enough. And I said, look, it's not gusting that much now. She said, well, it's not. I said, I want you to walk over here where the governor is so you can look over that side. Oh, I'm not looking over that side. She got back far from here to you and stopped and said, I can see you over there. But I talked her into going over there and just looking. She went in the car. And she went and got in the car and stayed in there the rest of the time. And I got the governor to come over there and said, Ms. Tillett, would you like for me to help you out? She said, no. And he laughed because I'd already briefed him that she was not being offensive to him. But every time I saw Ms. Tillett, no matter where it was, or I saw Johnny, we always had a Ms. Tillett joke or laugh to share with each other. I think she was a special lady.
Gentleman from Vance, Representative Garrison, recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also would like to speak about Mrs. Virginia Tillett. Frankly, I'm startled. I really was not aware that she had passed. I met her as a county commissioner, and she was an outstanding lady, very, very concerned about her county, her constituents, and people all across the state, quite frankly. And I would always ask Johnny how his mother was doing, and he would always tell me. And so my condolences to the family. She was a wonderful person, a tremendous role model, great citizen. Thank you.
Members, on the motion of Representative Hannig, and frankly, on motion of all members of the House, the chair would like to extend the courtesies of the gallery to Johnny and Michael Tillett, who are here with us today, along with Maya Tillett and her brother, Eddie Simmons. Would y'all please stand? We want to welcome you and thank you for being with us today.
And Johnny, let me say, we see you here all the time, and we're glad to do that. And I know your mom's looking down and very proud of every member of your family and what you all have done, how you have contributed to your community, and certainly the years of service that she gave there to the community on the Outer Banks is something that will last a lifetime of achievement and benefits for so many folks. So, once again, thank you for being here today. Thank you for sharing your time with us, and please know that you and your family will continue to remain in our thoughts and prayers. So thank you for being with us today. Members, we do have one final vote, and then after that, Chair will give an update on where we are schedule-wise. Senate Bill 470, the clerk will read.
Senators Johnson and Heiss, Senate Bill 470, a bill to be entitled ABC Technical and Other Changes, General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Representative Moffitt, did you want to do the amendment first or debate the bill first? Chair will extend whichever one the gentleman wishes to do first.
I'll debate the bill and then send forward the amendment.
Very well. Gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the House, this is a technical corrections bill brought forward by the Committee on Alcoholic Beverage Control. Most of the language is clarifying and conforming. There are a handful of modest policy changes. I know this has been discussed thoroughly in both caucuses, and I'm not aware of any objections. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to send forward the amendment.
The gentleman is recognized. Send forth amendment. The clerk will read.
Representative Moffitt moves to amend the bill on page 4, line 51, through page 5, line 6, by rewriting the lines to read.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, the commission had requested exemption for rulemaking in two particular areas, one regarding product selection and how they populate the diversity of products in our stores. The second exemption they requested was regarding pricing as it relates to the cost of those products, the markups, the bailment surcharges, and the bailment fees. We're granting the exemption to rulemaking strictly on the product selection aspect, and we're allowing the cost issue to remain in place. I encourage adoption of the amendment.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House is the adoption of Amendment A1. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment's adopted. We're now on the bill. Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House is the passage of Senate Bill 470 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Harrison, aye. Representative John, if the gentleman would like to vote. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 104 having voted in the affirmative and 6 in the negative. Senate Bill 470 passed a second reading without objection. Will be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 470 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 470, having passed third reading, is ordered engrossed and sent to the Senate by special messenger. Chair makes the following committee appointments. Representative Loftus is appointed to following committees: appropriations, transportation, health, homeland security, and local government. Senate will be so notified as well. Members, we have reached the conclusion of the calendar. Just want to make a couple of observations. Just number one, I want to thank everyone for the hard work on the budget, the strong bipartisan support, the fact that I think that we have passed a budget that is going to do a lot of good across this state, not just today, not just tomorrow, for many, many years to come. This legislature, I would submit, has risen to the challenge when it's come to addressing issues on COVID-19. Sometimes these are things that were divisive, but in the end, we came to resolution as much as we could. And on the funding side of it, really funded a lot of priorities. When each of you go back home to your districts today, you will go back and be able to talk about how schools are going to be receiving more money, how our hardworking teachers and state employees are going to be recognized and thanked for the work they do every day. The money that's going to be put into expanding broadband, water, sewer, improving roads, doing so many things that are important across this state. And I hope that during your time back home for Thanksgiving that we'll have a chance to get out and talk to folks in the community and talk about the good work that everyone here has done.
I also do want to thank the body for what I thought was a very appropriate debate on issues that could also be contentious. And I do think that during these times where a lot of folks yell and so forth, I think the kind of debate that we had today and the debate we've had is a constructive reminder that we can always disagree without being disagreeable. And at the end of the day, that the hallmark of this free republic is, in fact, the ability to express ourselves and have a disagreement, reach a resolution, and then continue working together, even in times when we don't necessarily see things eye to eye. And I just want to personally thank each and every one of you for that attitude and for that position that each of you bring to the table every day that you're here working tirelessly. A little bit of where we are right now on the schedule. This, of course, is November the 18th. There will be two non-voting sessions next week, but there will be no business taken care of so that, everyone can be home with their families over Thanksgiving and, be back in your districts. The plan at this point would be that we come back on Monday the 29th. That is the plan right now to see if we can conclude business as much as possible to then go into some kind of extended multi-week adjournment at that point. It is possible, however, that we may not be able to conclude things until the next week, which would be December the 6th. We are going to see if we can get there on the 29th. Just to be very candid, we're trying to get the budget tech correct bill done, some of those essential things that would need to be done. So that we could try to wrap up hopefully that week. But again, it might be the next week. My anticipation would be that if we do adjourn, it would be for probably a 3-week period since we need to be available to be brought in if we need to deal with any litigation, redistricting, et cetera. So, those will be the things. But the intent, of course, is to try to conclude our business, at that time. So we'll keep everybody informed. But the thing you can plan on right now is that there will be no votes taken until the earliest of November the 29th, and we will make sure, Representative Reeves will make sure we notify you for your caucus. Of course, Representative Bell, the same for our caucus, and that folks will know that. But just simply want to take a few minutes to thank each and every one of you and wish you and your families a happy Thanksgiving. With that, notices and announcements. For what purpose, the gentleman from Brunswick, Representative Ivor, rise.
A point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
I had a lot of questions about my seatmate, Sarah Stevens, and I was kind of curious myself. You know, she had trouble with her arm and her shoulder for quite a while. She just texted me back when I asked her about if she was okay and said she's quarantined so I can have arm surgery tomorrow. So keep Sarah in your prayers. Thank you.
For what purpose, gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise.
Point of personal privilege.
Gentleman has four.
I would just like to take the time to wish my oldest son a happy birthday.
I'm good. For what purpose, gentleman from Iredell, Representative McNeely, rise.
Mr. Speaker, I have submitted a representative statement with the clerk, and I ask that it be read in its entirety upon adjournment and spread across the journal, and I'd like to be recognized to speak to that statement.
So ordered, and the gentleman has the floor to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, the second week in October every year since 1846, there's been a camp meeting in Harmony, North Carolina. And I think Representative Cleveland, he's not here now, may have been at the very first one as a young chap, but I'm not sure. We're still trying to confirm that. But anyway, with that being said, they have met there for 175 years. And I think that's very impressive. And they have spread God's word in unity in the community every year, every October since then. And I just hope that someday we can all be there and take a part in it. I've been at different ones, but I haven't been there at 175 consecutive, but I have made a few. And it's a joyous time to worship our Lord and celebrate Jesus, our Savior. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Beaufort, Representative Kidwell, rise.
Point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to take a moment to wish my daughter-in-law a very happy birthday. She'll be celebrating that on the 22nd of this month. Very special lady in my life, as well as my son's, mine, because she brought me four beautiful grandchildren. First one about 18 years ago. So, Elena, I'm going to try and say this right. Feliz cumpleaños. Happy birthday to you. Many more.
Happy birthday. For what purpose does the...
For what purpose does the lady from Randolph, Representative Hurley, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
Lady has the floor.
Thank you. I just want to brag a little bit today. My son and daughter-in-law have black labs, and they are having the National Retriever competition in Sherrill, South Carolina this week, and they had three of them in there. One's left, Dagger, so I hope he wins, but wish him luck. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any further notices or announcements? Seeing none, the gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, is recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House do now adjourn to reconvene Monday, November 22nd at 2 p.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1 and in memory of Virginia Tillett.
Representative Hall moves, seconded by Representative Hanning, that the House do now adjourn to reconvene Monday, November 22nd at 2 p.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1 and in memory of Virginia Tillett. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The House stands adjourned.
Then Rutland Clerk reports the following bill duly ratified for presentation to the governor. Senate Bill 105, an act to make base budget appropriations, current operations of state agencies, departments, and institutions, and for other purposes.
Day. Chapter bills will be noted.
a representative statement honoring Virginia Tillett. Whereas Virginia Tillett was a professional educator and Outer Banks community leader who served the residents and visitors of Derrick County, North Carolina as an elected official for more than 30 years. And whereas Virginia Tillett served the positions of both chair and vice chair on the Derrick County Board of Election for 20 years, and in 2002 was elected to the Derrick County Board of Commissioners, where she served as a commissioner for 12 years. And whereas Virginia Tillett has been honored as the recipient of a wide array of awards over the past several decades, including the Derrick County Outstanding Citizen of the Year Award and the Outer Banks Chamber of Commerce's Citizen of the Year Award, both of which she received in 2015. And whereas in 2006, Virginia Tillett was honored by the North Carolina Governor Michael Easley, who awarded her the prestigious Order of the Longleaf Pine Award. And in April 2001, Virginia Tillett was awarded for her accomplishments and dedication to servant leadership by the North Carolina Black Alliance, who presented her with 2001 Trailblazer Award. Now, therefore, it is fitting to honor and recognize Virginia Tillett for the service she rendered Derrick County as an educator, leader, and public servant. In witness whereof, the undersigned certifies that the foregoing statement was read in the House and placed upon the Journal on the 18th day of November 2021, submitted by Representative Hannig, James White, House Principal Clerk. A representative statement, sharing Jesus and uniting the community for the glory of God. Whereas every second week in October, joyful noises can be heard in Harmony, North Carolina, it is time for an old-time tradition of camp meeting. Every year since 1846, families have gathered on the second weekend of October to worship at the Harmony Hill Camp Meeting. The tradition is still alive with a few differences. People come in cars instead of horse-drawn wagons. We use propane to cook our food instead of an open fire, and we meet under a large tent instead of under an arbor. And whereas in 1846, camp meeting began as a two-week-long revival, it is now known as a five-day event, with several church services a day on what is now known the Harmony Elementary School grounds. Farmers and their families came in covered wagons, pitched tents, cooked over open fires, and stayed the entire 2 weeks, often returning home every few weeks to check on livestock and property while children remained at the meeting site. The meetings were looked upon as not only a religious service to sing praises to God, but also a large social gathering, where many people at the time met their future husband or wife, made new friends, or socialized with old friends and neighbors. And whereas a brush of ardor was put to shelter the congregation during the 2 weeks of meetings, the water was carried from a nearby spring. Later, a more permanent type of arbor was constructed. And whereas when the first high school building was erected at Harmony in 1907, the Current and Hayes families deeded the site of the camp meeting to the Iredell County Board of Education with an understanding that the camp meeting was to be held every year. In the event, if it had ever ceased, the land was given to the school system, would go back to the family that originally owned it. By 1922, there was a need for a larger high school building, and around 1930, a new grammar grade school building was built on the site of the, by now, tin roof arbor, and the arbor was destroyed. Families who settled near the camp meeting site incorporated the town in 1927 and named it Harmony. And whereas the camp meeting continued to be held in a large tent at the school grounds until the new elementary school was built, leaving no room for the camp meeting. The meetings were then moved to Harmony Baptist Church, whose property sits next to the school. And whereas the name of the Harmony Hill Camp Meeting is derived from two factors. The first meeting was held on the site Crest Hill, where Harmony Elementary School now stands, and the name Harmony, according to tradition, was used because the Methodists, Presbyterians, and Baptists came together in peace and harmony, and also because of the type of singing during the camp meeting days. And whereas Brandy York, a blind minister who was instrumental in establishing an academy in Olin, preached at the camp meeting in the early 1847. Today, the camp meeting asks different preachers to preach at night of camp meeting each year. And whereas several Harmony area churches with origins dating to before the camp meeting played key roles in establishing Harmony Hill Camp Meeting. One and possibly most instrumental was Mount Bethel United Methodist Church, the oldest United Methodist Church in Iredell County, established in Prather Meeting's house in 1800. Other northeastern Iredell churches were originals dating to the earliest camp meetings, our Moss Chapel United Methodist Church and Snow Creek United Methodist Church. And whereas the Reverend Donald Ferris once summed it up like this: camp meeting, because of its rich heritage and tradition, needs to continue. Tradition plays a part in our faith. It shows us where we have been and where we are going now. Therefore, it is fitting to honor the tradition of camp meetings and to recognize the 150th anniversary of the Harmony Hill Camp Meeting. In witness whereof, the undersigned certifies that the foregoing statement was read in the House and placed upon the Journal on the 18th day of November 2021, submitted by Representative McNeely, James White, House Principal Clerk. Thank you.